Hello and welcome to the EV Cafe Takeaway, a podcast focused on that zero emission future that we all hope for. And every week I get joined by one of the wonderful members of the EV Cafe team. And this week, no exception, I've got the lovely John Curtis. John, welcome to you today.
Oh, bless you. And thank you. Yes, it's lovely to be here. The sun is shining, birds are singing, and all is well with our world.
Who knew that the sun would shine in Scotland and England at the same time? There we go, everybody. We learn something new every day. But listen, more importantly, we get joined by innovators, pioneers, and collaborators from across our industry, and today is no exception. We have the wonderful George Newton from Iveco, or however you wish to pronounce it, but it's a very, very good company. Welcome, George.
Thank you, men. It's good to be here. It's nice to see the Right Said Fred tribute act is coming together well. So, I'm on board for every step of it.
He's come out punching.
I cast that stone on myself.
Deeply dipping.
Come out swinging. Oh, dear me. Yes, well, there we go, everybody. That's how we're going to kick this off. But, George, listen, before we descend into the absolute chaos that this has written all over it, tell us a little bit about the company that you work for, and then we're going to explore how you got there and some of your interests, which are curious, that's for sure. But anyway, tell me, Iveco, I mean, I love vans, as you know. Wax eloquently about the wonderful company Iveco.
Iveco, from my point of view, great company to work for. I've been involved with them for quite some time now. And basically, they're going to cover everything from the 3.5-ton market all the way through to a 44-ton tractor unit and everything in between, covering off Euro cargo. And obviously, the area that I specialize in is probably the topic for today, the daily, with its various different methods of movement, be it battery, gas, or diesel. The company's always had an eye on sustainability. I think the product, obviously I am a little biased, but the product takes a hell of a lot of beating in an industrial environment, and it looks great to me. They've always been a joyous business to work with, both as an employee and as a customer, as I have been in the past of them as well. So yeah, it's great to be here. Embrace that Italian culture that permeates every vibe of it and emanates down into the product with the design cues and the engineering prowess that kind of underpins everything that we do.
Yeah. And before we move on, I should have warned you about this question, but I was really excited to see this partnership between Iveco and Hyundai. What are your thoughts about, having a new product that might be 3 tons, 2.5 tons, whatever it is, a smaller van in your lineup?
I mean, you've boxed me in a little bit of a corner here. Obviously, at the minute, that's not applicable to the UK market. I mean, Anything that can extend our downreach down into further penetration of the core values that we've got and key in with a partner like that, and I think that relationship will work both ways in the end, is wonderful. At the moment, probably with the marketplace as testing as it is, it would be really interesting to be able to dip below into some of those lower territories. But at the moment, that's not something that's on the table for us, but something that's definitely on my radar, something to look forward to. Suddenly opens up a whole new pantheon of people that we can actually speak to and engage with that maybe don't run the slightly heavier vehicles or need the larger vehicles that we would do. So it would be a nice sort of gateway entry to someone into the Iveco family to bring them in that way. So, yeah, if and when it comes, I'm all for it.
A new pantheon of people. I love that. But I know John wants to get in. And John, over to you, sir.
Well, you mentioned the eDaily. And the eDaily is some piece of work. And those who've listened to me witter on before know that cars are my thing. Vans really aren't. And the eDaily was the first time I got into a van and thought, wow, this drives like an electric car. And I mean, I took off at a rate of knots because I just didn't expect it to perform so well. Indeed. The eDaily is remarkable because it's a world record holder. It has towed more than any other vehicle of its type. 150-ish tons, I think. It can regularly tow 3.5 tons. It's a remarkable thing. But the bit that really got me was when Mike Cutts said to me, anything you can do in a standard diesel or petrol daily, you can do in an electric. And that blew my mind. There's no reason why people wouldn't.
Yeah, well, that was the key message. I think we came to the party late, and that enabled us to kind of have a purview of what everybody else was doing or had done. And I watched Mike's interview with you guys, obviously, and I don't want to kind of go over what he said, but everything that we do within diesel is kind of a hallmark, our USP of what we wanted to carry over to the EV. Yeah. And I think we've absolutely smashed that in terms of being able to tow what we can tow. I mean, yes, the world record was a little bit of standalone. You're not rocking up every day and towing half a car park behind you. But, you know, I guess the option's there should you have a private airfield to want to relinquish that wish. And obviously, there shouldn't really be a compromise in today's world with the technologies that we have between doing what you can do before and doing what you do now. Yes, everyone would probably admit that towing's going to impact range, but towing impacts range in a diesel too. And it's that understanding of it's not a magic wand. It's a piece of engineering that's been bolted together by very clever people to fulfill a purpose. But there is always going to be a fuel expended, be that stored electrical energy or be that dinosaur blood. You know, it's the same thing.
Brilliant piece of kit. Now, I'm just picking up your intelligence. You're a man who has a great vocabulary. Already you've used three words which make me sit up and go, you're not any van salesman, are you? Talk to us about your education and how you started out on your journey, because you're a you're a bright pixie.
I wouldn't say I'm that bright at all. I think there's a couple of words I've written down that sound right, and I'm sure people will message into you and say that I've used all those words in completely the wrong place and completely out of context. My education, I mean, to that point, I guess that I was born into the motor trade. My family had a Renault franchise dealer group. I think it may have been the first. It was AC Williams in Lincolnshire. It's no longer around. So I was kind of spat out. It's not very complimentary of my mother, really, is it? But I was born into the industry, very gently squeezed out, and arrived.
I mean, none of these images we really need in our mind, honestly. But
I have to scrub my brain.
I realise this now. And I guess that I've just been living and breathing it since the day that I was born. Mm. I've always been fascinated by it. I'm reminded that my first word in my father's recollection was bzzzt, and they couldn't quite work out what this noise was until the car transporter turned up on the forecourt one day and I was there in my pushchair, and I made the noise as the vehicle applied the handbrake and obviously expelled the air that a truck does. Yeah. That was my first word. And I guess from that moment on, I was always going to be linked to the motor trade.
But that's interesting, George, because you then go on to, having looked at what you studied, you know, you've gone to commercial law, you've done engineering, and then you ended up in the Navy. Talk us through that journey that sort of went from, you know, dyed in the wool, kind of oil running through your veins to where you went then.
So leaving school, my father didn't want me to go into the motor trade at all, wanted me to go out there and do something completely different. Even in 1994-5, he was saying the motor industry is kind of at this point where I don't know if it'll be around long enough for you to be in. As a side note, I have a son who's looking at joining the motor industry, and I'm thinking, I don't think there's going to be, you know, it's one of those constants that seems to dog the motor industry as it moves through. So I joined a company called Ford and Slater's DAF. They had an amazing apprenticeship at the time. It wasn't DAF funded, but it was backed by a company called Remit. I went on day release to gather a city and guilds in commercial law, motor vehicle knowledge and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, the motor industry is one of those ones where if you get in with a good dealer group or a good brand, you are going to be peppered with qualifications and experience that they want you to have. I'm a big believer in that we need to get young people in and grow them. There seems to be a glut of young people in the industry at the moment. I don't know why that is. I think it's a great industry to get into. A lot of the skills are cross-transferable. So I'm a big fan of seeing young people leave school and get an apprenticeship within the motor industry and learn it the long way through. I think it's one of the better ways of gaining the experience. Equally so, obviously, you can probably join at a manufacturer level with a degree or associated degree at a higher level. But to me, you need to understand the bells and whistles of what goes on the ground in front of a customer with the product in its rawest form, in its rawest moment. At that point, you've literally seen every turn of the wheel that a vehicle could take. I suppose the snapback was I had finished my apprenticeship. I'd done about 6 or 7 years there, and I looked at my father and his father and my great uncle and other people and thought, do I really want to be in this for the rest of my life? And I've got a soft spot for history, I suppose. And out of all the armed forces, the Navy was the one that kind of ticked my boxes, see the world. If I'd joined the RAF, I would have spent my time in a field in Lincolnshire, which is where I live, and that's currently what I do. So that would be a bit strange. So I went around the world. The Navy were absolutely wonderful to me. Again, not exactly cross-transferable skills, but, you know, certainly that's where the engineering skills came from and understanding. And they probably prepared me into the man I am today. It was a great experience. I was surrounded by some very inspiring people. But at that time of my life, I was looking at starting a family, and the Navy, despite my best efforts, just was not compatible with that. So when I came out, the place to go was back to the motor trade.
Fascinating.
And so within the Royal Navy, you were an engineer. So you're looking after their engines?
I was the trade doesn't really exist anymore. The Navy's been through a lot of changes, but I was an operating mechanic, AW, which is above water warfare. So my specialisms were radar plotting and preparation. So you'd take that raw blip. It's a little bit different to the World War II films. I didn't really think we'd be into this today, but gentlemen, you know, here we are. And you prepare that with associated iconography on top, which is then transmitted around the fleet or the ship at that moment so you can understand what's around you. It's a lot of sitting in dark rooms and being shouted at, if I'm honest. But, you know, it's challenging. As part of that, you obviously trained how to repair the kit you're working on and the wider infrastructure of the weapon systems. You're up at ex weapons crews as well. So that's obviously preparing the weapon systems externally and manning those in times of need. Everyone's a trained firefighter on board because you've only got a finite amount of people. And then towards the end of my career in the Navy, I specialized as what's called a navigator's yeoman, so preparing the charts on board. The ship sails with a full suite of charts for the whole world. And at the time, it's different now. It's all GPS. I don't even know if a navs yeoman would even exist. I'm sure they probably do in some form. But you would use a pencil to trace in onto the coordinates delivered by this kind of weekly newspaper that you would get. And then you would draw the iconography on with a pen to update the charts and the maps to be as accurate as the ones that were being updated in Portsmouth at that moment. So you would replicate that document and bring it up to date.
One of the things which is consistent throughout your career is that you've worked within teams, you've worked with people, and continue to do so when extolling the virtues of the Iveco. who has been your biggest influence through your career? Is it a colleague? Is it somebody else? Is it a teacher? Or what have you got that's really helped shape you?
I've had a couple of influences. Obviously, my parents, fantastically hardworking. My mother was in the motor trade. She then later span off and got herself a degree and became a teacher, which was quite influential. It was quite inspiring to see someone, you know, in their 30s decide to just drop everything and go chase that dream. My father's been very inspirational. His sort of motivation and interest in the motor trade still exists to this day. He'll often throw a question to me when I walk in the kitchen door, or what do you think about this? He asked me about Hyundai, probably before I'd even computed it myself. So he's got his finger on the pulse. He worked in some sort of classic big Ford franchises back in the day, Hartwall, Sanderson, CD, Bramall. They're not really around anymore, but at the time in the 90s, they were powerhouses of the UK motor industry. So they've always been very inspirational to me. It's the passion that I think that I probably pick up from my father and the dogged determination I probably get from my Scottish ancestral mother. And I think through work, there's been a few people that have inspired me. I've got a good colleague that works for MAN, Martin Everett. We started as apprentices together at Ford and Slater's. He joined a year after me, and he was my apprentice, bizarrely. I don't quite know how you get an apprentice and an apprentice, but that's what it was. And we've stayed very close friends, but his work ethic inspires me, and my sort of attitude towards the business, I think, inspires him. And then most recently, and this isn't going to sound like it, and everyone at Iveco is going to give me some absolute stick for this, but probably now, there's a couple of people that inspire me on a regular basis. Mike Kutz's dedication to this business has been fantastic. Mm. I've obviously seen a couple of the turns of the wheel at Iveco, and he's come along, and he is a man that, you know, believes. He allows you to get on and do what you need to do. But his vision for the brand has been absolutely fantastic, and the implementation of that has been very inspiring. To see someone come on board and latch on to the USPs that I've recognized and have strived and admire within the brand, that Mike's picked those up and is able to shine those up so people can see them externally as well, is fantastic. Mm. Obviously, I've got a couple of colleagues in that work with me in the key accounts team, but I'm Torfin is one of them, Simon, very close to them both, but Simon's always rocked up with a smile on his face despite whatever is going on around. So I found that quite inspiring as I age in, I suppose. You know, we all find sometimes motivation seems to disappear a little bit, but seeing Simon pull in so hard on the head collar, probably a Lincolnshire colloquialism, but he's very inspiring, and you know, it's nice to have someone to bounce off, which is a joy. So in terms of motor trade inspirations, they're your probably keys.
Thank you.
Fantastic. I know Simon Williams. I knew him before he was at Iveco, and we used to have some wonderful conversations when, but like you say, always bright, always engaging, really positive guy. And I would agree with you with regard to Mike as well, because actually somebody coming from outside of vans, you know, he came from charging and had done other things prior to this.
Yeah.
It's very impressive to come with the detailed approach, the mission-mindedness, the appreciation for the customer's need. And he's weaved that into everything that Iveco have done. And, you know, particularly with the way the eDaily has come to market in particular.
Absolutely.
It is that, and that is inspirational. And also knowing all the answers to all the questions, or knowing where to get them very, very quickly. Yeah. I was so impressed. And, you know, and I'm not doing that just because Iveco are a sponsor. Long before they were a sponsor of the EV Cafe, we were saying Iveco are doing something really, really well here. So it's impressive. But what comes back to me from what you've just been saying is that people are really important. Is that something that you resonates for you, that the value of human beings in your life and how important they are to the makeup of your day to day?
I think that, to your point, I think I love talking to people. I enjoy that dynamic. That is the element of this business that I've recognized since a child to now that is probably the unspoken part. It's almost the dark art that I think maybe is a little bit lost. Maybe this is why the young people aren't coming through. I think people also have a little bit of a negative image of sales, which is kind of the proving ground before you get through to a manufacturer. Mm. And it feels mm-hmm. like you're going to be selling people PVC glazed windows and getting their arm up their back. And we're not like that. I've always said that I see myself more as the, I read a book once and it said, you know, do it your way. And there was a few different ways of saying you can be a doctor. You can prescribe a medicine to somebody in a way instead of selling them. And now that's one element of it. But to me, before you even get to that part, I want to befriend you. I want to know you. I want to know what makes you tick. I don't necessarily really even want to sell you a vehicle today. If Iveco hear this, I'm sacked. I would rather understand everything about you. And if Iveco can fit into that perfectly like a jigsaw piece, I'm all for it. If it doesn't, I'd rather have the professional integrity to say, this isn't going to work for you, because there's a vehicle for every single solution and not always one that fits correctly. I'd rather have the ability to say, you know, let's keep talking. I've really enjoyed our conversation, but I just don't think we can find something for you today. But, you know, keep in touch as your fleet evolves or situations develop. Maybe we can. But if I put this into your fleet today, you'd probably hate it. And I'd rather have that validity to say this is right or this is wrong. In the meantime, I think that the whole conversational piece and getting to know people is what I'm most interested in. Probably quite frustrating to the office. I hate an Excel spreadsheet. They're my kryptonite. They absolutely kill me stone dead on the floor, and I don't even know what I'm looking at. I just see a sea of numbers. If you remember those magic eyes from the 90s, I hope that if I stare at it long enough, maybe the answer will come through the screen to me. I've been trying a long time now. It doesn't work. It just puts you further behind on the Excel spreadsheet you hate, but, you know, one day. But, yeah, talking to people to me is the thing that has motivated me most about the motor trade and is the most key element of what I enjoy.
Mm. And it probably leads me to my next question that, you know, because life is not always easy, right? And, you know, people have kept you in a good place. Talk to us about a time when it's been particularly difficult. And I suspect, you know, that people might be involved in this as well. I don't know for sure. But what has been a really big challenge in your life and how did you come through it?
I'll be honest with you, I kind of hit the roadblocks about a couple of years into my tenure with Iveco. I'd come out of a divorce. I was struggling to keep everything together in terms of the accounts I was looking after. Iveco going through some changes at the time. I had a lot on personally and professionally, and I had to take some time out, and Iveco supported me wholeheartedly through it. They provided me every single tool in the toolbox. They gave me time. They gave me help. They gave me someone to talk to. They supported me financially on the way through it. I feel so indebted to them for taking me seriously, for understanding that. Mike was pivotal in bringing me back into the business, and the way he did it was flawless. Iveco themselves, as part of the wider C&H group as they were at the time, recognized everything within it, supported me, didn't disbelieve me, didn't just think I needed an afternoon in the pub or something like that. And that brought me through. And then obviously coming back into work from that, rediscovering the passion, rediscovering my love for Iveco as well, was a really great journey. That's kind of, there's a few things, you know, the Navy defined me, maybe Ford and Slater's defined me, maybe my birth into the motor trade defined me. That probably did as well. It fundamentally changed me as a person and maybe my attitude towards life a little bit. And, you know, you pop out the other side of that different, but maybe fixed, certainly a little bit more capable of dealing with the challenges that the world presents itself in the modern day. The modern day world, it isn't kind. We're all working in silos despite our best efforts. You've maybe put a real downer on things, guys, but you know, everything's great now. And it's this journey that really has brought me to this point in time. And it's almost like the perfect storm. I've arrived at Iveco at the right moment with the products that we've got, having seen an evolution of the business and myself at the same time. And yeah, I'm thoroughly motivated by the way Iveco treated me. So yeah, it was Iveco's handing it, I suppose, that brought me back from the brink.
Yeah, and George, I don't think you have brought it down, or I think you've shown how humanity, with both its highs and its lows, kind of has a way of bringing and birthing, spitting out, squeezing out gently, wonderful people, and that's exactly what's happened here. And thank you for going there and for sharing, you know, the challenging times, because it's not always easy.
No, I think we're tempted to sort of gloss over that a little bit, and it's not something I don't wear it on myself as a badge, but I'll definitely be open to talk to anybody about it. And I know we're all here to talk is a bit of a cliche these days, and you know, it's often said but not often taken up on. But you know, I think that the world's probably a little bit smarter now in terms of its engagement with people, and you know, much the better for it, I would say.
So the future is very positive then, George, in that you've got a good mindset, your head is screwed on and you're really up for the game. You've got a brilliant product. You've got a great team led by a good leader. What does 2024 commercially look like for you? If you get to the end of this year and you want to pat yourself on the back, what are you trying to achieve?
I know this sounds bizarre, but I don't normally get wrapped up in the numbers, really. I just try and do the best job in front of me with the situations that are presented. You know, normally the business, you know, makes sure we're on the right footing in terms of the accounts I look after. They're all sort of centrally agreed international key accounts. So that is all locked in. I'm just looking at making sure that, probably more from a service level, that we're talking to people, that we're making it a frictionless experience for me, is probably one of the keys to trading in the modern era, to remove any friction at all in the rotation of the process. And then it's just really at that point, it just becomes a numbers game, you know, and that's all the motor trade ever has been.
Because the numbers are quite tough, aren't they, at the moment, especially in the van sector. We see, or the electric van sector, because we see a growth in year-on-year sales in the van sector, about 5%. But we're seeing a difficult time for electric vans at the moment. What do you think we need to do as a society to support businesses to make that transition?
I think that... at the moment, I think the manufacturers are probably making the right moves in terms of the technology that's being brought forward, in terms of the investment in the R&D that's been implemented to get to this point. I mean, a lot of them have gone from zero to hero in what could be considered an R&D scenario overnight, really. I know behind the scenes there's been a lot of preparation going on to get to this point, but, you know, a finger snap happened as requested by the government of the day, and we were 10 minutes to midnight, and it felt like we really had some momentum going and we were heading in the right direction. You know, infrastructure probably a little bit behind, but the horse pulls the cart, and that's how the business moves forward. It's kind of always been that way. I think that the advocation of EVs in the UK, bizarrely, I think there's a bit of a, and this isn't disrespectful to you, sir, but there's a bit of a John Mate down the pub who has an opinion on EVs, and that's kind of the industry take, is the John Mate opinion down the pub about what it can or it can't do, and I'd never buy that, and I'd never do that, and you won't get me out of the diesel, and that's fine, and that's okay. And when the government moved it from 10 minutes to midnight to 11:30, I mean, it gave us a real good cold open, I suppose, to what it's going to be like when we finally get there. We've kind of already we've got really close to, you know, we're at DEFCON 1 or whatever it was. We were ready to go. But then obviously the doomsday clock wound back. But now we know where we need to be when the moment happens again. So I hope the industry has learned something from that. We got a little bit of a pre-screening, didn't we, to test the waters. And hopefully now when we finally arrive there, infrastructure will have caught up a little bit. I think really the only thing else that really could help would be, and I've said this before, and I mean it in the nicest way, but governments seem to be telling us to save polar bears, but then at the same time, they're basically monetizing their destruction. They're basically selling us ringside tickets to their eventual drowning, but aren't even spending a penny of it on a life raft. And I find that odd, if I'm honest. If it's that bad and the situation is so prescient, tell us what you're doing with the money that you're receiving in tax or in fines that we receive as manufacturers, and what you've been basically imposing upon the UK motorist and businesses for probably time immemorial right now. And every single litre of fuel that's dispensed, every single has got all this, you shouldn't be using. Taxes are a, I remember reading once that taxes are a, they're a sign from the government that you shouldn't be doing this thing. Therefore, we're going to tax it to put you off the idea. Well, they just tax oxygen at the moment, don't they? So, and you can't be off that. I don't really understand how they've recouped this money. And I think Winston Churchill always said that we take a tax. It doesn't mean we're going to spend it on that thing. You know, we take cigarette tax, but we're not going to spend it on fixing the cigarette problem. But there comes a point in time where if the world is in, and to use that clock again, if we are 5 minutes to midnight on the scale of destruction that is that's peddled to us from scientists and government bodies and everybody that takes an interest in the whole process of moving away from fossil fuels and other harmful gases associated with road transport, do something with it. Show me carbon capture. Show me you've built a forest. Show me that you're using that money to then build a pot to enable people to get into EVs so that we can get a ringside seat to a polar bear on a glacier mint rather than up to its neck in seawater. Do something. They have a lot of good ideas. I think at the moment they're chasing a lot of sound bites because that's really what politics has become. We just need, we need something significant. And this isn't like I sit on one side or the other. It's a totally apathetic political comment. We just need something to happen that backs up the talk with some real action.
Fantastic. You put that really well, and I agree with you entirely. I don't think it's entirely upon the government, I'll say that much, but I do feel very strongly that the message of decarbonisation and the action of decarbonisation need to go together. Mm-hmm. And you know, we're racing off in a million different directions, but very, very clearly articulated for those of us that that are in and close to the subject. And for those of you that don't know, polar bears don't actually go on glacier mints. That was an advert, everybody. Don't worry. They do actually go on glaciers. But anyway, but coming back to the point. Fast forwarding maybe 10 or 15 years, and looking back at life, George, what are you most proud of now, but also what would you like to be known for in 15 years' time, or as people look back on your life?
What am I most proud of now, having achieved in the motor trade?
Or life in general, motor trade and life in general?
Life in general, I've had some ups and downs in my life. Obviously, I mentioned the divorce before, and finding your feet after that's been a bit tough. Found a wonderful young lady a couple of years ago who's been very inspiring to me in her attitude towards life, which is great. My two young children, say they're young. They're not young. one of them's 17 going on 18 and the other one's just turned 15. So, it's not so young, but they're an inspiration to me. They make me very proud. They're polite, well-spoken people, and that's all I've ever asked them to be. I don't care what they do. as long as they go through life being polite and courteous, the rest is up to them. So in terms of life, there are a couple of proud achievements. I suppose my other one, I have a bit self-promotional, so feel free to cut it out. I've got a reasonably successful video game podcast. It's listened to all around the world, sometimes in places that I wouldn't even expect it to be downloaded, where English isn't even the first language. So obviously we do well in the Australia and all the sort of classic English-speaking territories. But then the Netherlands is also probably an exception because English is a second language there, but we do well in Germany, obviously America, South America, parts of Africa seem to have been booming recently, which I find odd. And people pay us money on a monthly basis to listen to my prattle. So we must be doing something right. But yeah, got a good team behind me there. They've been very kind to me. Got a couple of Americans on board and another British guy. And yeah, it's well received and a almost becoming a second job at the moment, but let's call it a hobby for now. In the industry, I think that my proudest achievement has probably just been my career at Iveco. You know, it wasn't the easiest transition across from Fiat when they asked me to move over to Iveco as a specialism and double down on that, which I was honoured to do. We've got a soft spot in the family for international tractors, so to be part of the brand that builds those is wonderful. Got a couple of them at home. We had a Euro cargo until very recently. So, you know, I'm a man that believes in the product. I drive a Fiat because its engine's been fettled by FPT. So my dedication is unquestionable. I think that my proudest achievement really is doing what I do at Iveco right now. I think it's like the high point of my career. I feel like it's a place that I've aspired to get to, and this is where I am. And I think I'm relatively well thought of internally and externally, so that's good. In terms of where I'd like to see myself in 10 or 15 years' time, hopefully still here, having provided some strength and help towards the business, I'd like to think that my legacy in the industry is just someone who made it fun, yet we still got the job done, and ticked all the boxes that were required along the way, be those financial, be those service levels, be those friendship, be those just building something new within the team. Yeah, I mean, it doesn't sound like I've got my sights very high, does it? But yeah,
it's so important. I'm happy.
It's interesting. We always usually finish with a question from me, which is about, you know, your aspirations for the rest of your days. And if you had a magic wand, what would you do? And just because of the last answer you gave, I have something completely different to ask you. Xbox okay. or PlayStation?
I'm a little bit brand neutral. Kind of have to be. I've got probably everything. I would say, but. I would say for the games that I like to play, they are predominantly on PlayStation. They're single-player story-driven games with a bit of a deep narrative, something that can take you on an emotional journey. They're movies, but better these days, not only from a graphical fidelity point of view, but from a storytelling point of view. You can watch a movie for 2 hours and you think, yeah, I kind of knew how that guy felt. But in the modern video game, you literally live their life. So when something happens within that play, that stage, I'm not saying that you feel it and you cry your eyes out, but you're certainly far more invested in it than having built it or partaken in it or, you know, been involved in the raising of this child within, you know, within reason. You have a more emotional investment in the characters. So, you know, for me, those games are best on PlayStation right now. And that's an industry. That industry is something that keeps growing. It's kind of losing its way a little bit post-COVID because of spiraling budgets and other things like that. But that's an industry story for probably something other than the EV Cafe, if I'm honest with you, gentlemen.
Doesn't that say so much about George, though, that there's an investment of himself in the thing and he gets the reward as a result of that? I think that sums you up brilliantly, George. Thank you for that. It's been a real interest. And just in case we don't mention it, baseball is your other passion.
Baseball is another passion. I probably quite far up the autistic scale, if I'm honest with you, with the way that I kind of go deep on hobbies.
Me too, my friend.
Hallmark. It's probably the inbreeding, if I'm honest with you, hanging from Lincolnshire. Luckily, I've got the correct amount of digits. Well, mum was the actual sort of dilution of the gene pool, if I'm honest with you. So, yeah.
Oh, right. Oh, thank goodness.
They saved me from a multiple footed hand, I suppose. Well, although there's nothing wrong with that. Obviously, it just makes interaction a little bit difficult.
But for reference, in the UK, there is actually something wrong with that. It might be okay in certain parts of the world, but it's definitely not okay here.
I wasn't referring to the inbreeding element.
See.
Referring to the misshaped
outcome.
The misshaped,
right, yes,
digits. Yeah, exactly. Maybe that'll give you
on that
room
bombshell.
It's been an education.
Brilliant. Well, it certainly has. Well, George, you know, today has been an absolute delight. And what is absolutely clear to me is that there's no surprise that you have a podcast that is listened to around the world, because I could listen to you all day long. It is easy for me to see that. And in the time that we've known each other, which is back into my lease plan days, found you incredibly personable and have really enjoyed our conversations, which have been lengthy. I think we first started talking about the legislation around the weight legislation. I don't seem to remember you sending me a certificate. Anyway,
I think we were ahead of the legislation, because I do believe that there's a gentleman at Iveco called Martin Flack that was pivotal in the whole 4.25 adoption in the first place. So, right. You know, Iveco were trailblazers that have actually paved the way through CNG to now with the alternative fuel conversation. Martin had his eye on the future and has obviously enabled the industry to be able to adopt 4.25 and get some payload and save a polar bear. I mean, you couldn't really ask for much more. But before we get to the outro, gentlemen, I just want to say I'm very humbled by the fact that you've chosen me to be able to come on here. I think that as a brand, as a industry experts, as you guys are, you're doing an absolutely wonderful job. I had the fortune to be at one of your EV Cafe conversations at the Leicester Tigers, maybe getting on for a month ago. Time flies when you're having fun, gentlemen. As always, very inspiring individuals, and as a collective, equally as inspiring. The platform that you've created is second to none. I think that the place that you're finding within the industry is really fantastic, and I think it's seen as a very big positive. I think that we're all getting a lot of good experiences off the back of some of the things that you guys are doing and the doors that you're pushing on. I think that some of the industry people that you're bringing together and some of the brands that you've crafted together has been not only a good collection of people, but a really nice selection of different influencing bodies. You know, I attended the other day and there's a rental company there. We were there. And there's people from telematics, there's people from EV infrastructure. I think there were people there from a tire company as well. There were all sorts of associated industries that kind of pads out to be the bigger scene of what you guys are looking after. And I think that it's a one-stop shop. And I think if anybody's got any queries or anything like that, they should check out some of these shows that you've done, and definitely some of the written material that you guys have put on your social medias. Wonderful stuff, gentlemen. You didn't pay me to say this. I mean this. People need to get on board and utilize your skills and your kindness and your passion for this, which is wonderful.
You were right, Paul. He is lovely. He's lovely, isn't he? He's a nice man. He's a very nice man.
Yeah, and on that note, we might as well just finish, because he's just done the outro and all that kind of stuff. But actually, George, thank you for that. Genuinely, that's exactly what we want to be, as a representation of the ecosystem that surrounds ecosystem and community. I think those, you know, with the electric vehicle community, so important to be community first, people orientated, you know, began in lockdown, that whole focus of humanity and connecting, and those that, but you summarized it beautifully. Well, I do want to give a shout out to your podcast, send me the link afterwards, but also, what is it called?
Oh my goodness. It's called the Unofficial Controller Podcast. I'm probably a little bit more footloose and fancy free on there than I am on here, so just a pre-warning, there's no swears. That's one of my hard and fast rules. I think in the whole 200 and however many episodes we've done to this point, we've probably slipped up once or twice, but to me, you don't need to go there to make it listenable. In fact, it's far more listenable without it. So, but I do say some bizarre things. I wouldn't rein myself in a conversation about Lincolnshire inbreeding, that's for sure. But they're welcome to find it. It's on all platforms.
So it's the Unofficial Controller Podcast.
Those that know would know what that means. When you're a kid and your elder sibling or cousin or uncle or whatever, he's got the genuine controller. He's playing with the best, the premium, and he'll throw you something that looks like it's been chewed by a dog. to me, if you can then use that controller and beat them, because the outro is, if life hands you the unofficial controller, it doesn't matter what you do with it. It's what you do with it that counts. And that's kind of the hallmark line of the show and where we want to go with it and how we embrace people and all that sort of stuff. So
I love that. One of the perfect guests. Thank you.
Thank you both.
So everybody, listen, you will have enjoyed this chat no end. We have had lots of other great chats, and do head over to hear many of the other people on the evcafe.org, but follow George, connect with his podcast. I think that's great. Obviously, Iveco, in central in importance, not only producing a great vehicle, but also doing it in a great way and looking to meet everybody's mission that you've got today. Vans are important. Vans are making a difference, but they make more of a difference if you can do what you do today with them. So it's fantastic. George, you've been a diamond. We're really, really grateful for the conversation today. And thanks everybody for listening. As I say, hook up with George, hook up with John and I, follow the EV Cafe, follow Iveco. It's a good ride. And somebody's having lunch by the sounds of it. But anyway.
Yeah, it sounds like they are. Welcome to the EV Cafe.
And on that note, have a great day, everybody.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Well
Take
played,
care,
George.
Everyone.
Well played.